Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Peter.
And this is Tom.
And you're listening to History Teachers Talking Podcast.
Now part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
All right, this is Peter Zablocki and Thomas Reska, and welcome back to our podcast. I think it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, wouldn't you say, Tom?
Oh, what a segue there, Pete. That's a great segue.
I tried. I was trying to be really creative on this one, you know, kind of like Mr. Rogers here, you know?
You tried, yes.
All right, so what do we got today, Tommy?
Well, today we're going to look at someone who's basically anyone who's an adult or even a kid would know this person, right? Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and even the legacy he has today. I mean, Daniel Tiger and everything like that. Well, I'm sure we'll get into that, but we're going to look at who was Fred Rogers, bust some myths about him. He was not a sniper. So yeah. He was not a sniper. He did not have tattoos. We'll get to that. But he was very real. And I think that's something that if anyone does any research on him or watches that movie with Tom Hanks, What's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, really just explains, I mean, more and more research I did this guy. I know you and I were both talking about before, like, I started tearing up. Like, I don't know. This is like the story that I read about that gave me the idea for the, you know, said, let's do a podcast on Mr. Rogers was like really intense, but just like sweet. Like, I don't think you can find a more caring and just nice person than Fred Rogers. And everyone who ever met him said the same thing. Like, what you saw on TV, that's what it was. And he was all about helping kids. We'll get into a little bit about him, some of the shows, some memorable moments. I guess that story that was downplayed, didn't come out till I think years later, maybe even after his death, we'll talk about, I'd like to talk about a little bit. And just from one way or another, again, just the influence and his legacy from the shows that stemmed off from his original show, which lasted until 2001. He was on for a long time.
Interesting, because he got off in 2001 and then 9/11 happens. And then he comes back out of retirement just a few months before his death from stomach cancer to give like another message to the American people, but also to children, because that's what he spoke to children, and at a level that it was not an adult really talking to them. It was like a kind person speaking to them on their level, which is amazing and resonates to this day, as you said, with people that are adults, our age. I mean, he spoke to us when we were little kids. I'm not sure if people today, like if I was to ask my students, I mean, maybe they would know who Mr. Rogers is.
They might know him. They probably know the idea. They would know Daniel Tiger, was like original character, which was a character from. I remember, I think, watching Daniel Tiger once, obviously, with my kids, and I was just like, wait a minute, Trolley and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, all right, that's from Mr. Rogers. So I'm getting a little bit off a tangent. Sorry, I remember watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, you know, before or after. I think it was after Sesame Street, like the two of them. And we can talk about the epic crossover, too. So there's some interesting,
there was Big Bird.
But it's some interesting stuff. Mr. Rogers actually got in an argument with Big Bird in real life.
Yep.
So something to talk about.
We'll talk about it. So basically, for those of you that do not, for some reason, know who Mr. Rogers is, he was an American television host of his own basically preschool television series called Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which ran, as Tom mentioned, until 2001. It started in 1968.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of episodes.
It's 2001, And I think they still showed it in reruns up on PBS up until 2016.
If you go to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, I think it's .com or whatever, they have all of his episodes. And it's interesting too, because you click
every
on
episode.
It. Literally, it's like episode 1,700. I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is crazy.
Yeah.
And it really gets you going because you really start getting like, I wouldn't say teary-eyed, but even sometimes you just get so sucked in like, wow, like kindness is still alive. I mean, this guy won more than 40 honorary degrees in his life, several awards, Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2002, a Lifetime Achievement Emmy in 1997. And a really known video of him is actually his induction to the Television Hall of Fame in 1999, which had so many known people there just literally standing up and like crying because of what this guy was saying.
He was just so well respected, and everything he did, he thought very detailed about. They said like he didn't want to ad lib anything. He said the kids deserved to have everything thought out. And he really put thought in like, how would this perceive a kid in one of his most influential episodes. I guess I'm getting ahead of myself, but I kept on coming up was when he did a episode about getting a haircut and how a haircut won't hurt.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that kids would be afraid of getting haircuts. So let's do an episode on getting a haircut and show that it doesn't hurt to get a haircut. It's just something that simple. But like when you're a kid, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal. Oh my gosh. Remember taking your kids to get a first haircut?
Oh my gosh. It's a nightmare.
It's a freaking nightmare, man.
It's a nightmare. I remember the barber just was like, no, no charge. Just go.
Like, I remember that. Yeah.
He's like, just leave. Just leave.
I was like, and never come back.
Yeah, I was like, sorry, man.
Ours, but, I remember they tried everything. We went to the special barber that had like TVs there, and they tried to distract my kid.
Doesn't work.
He was having none of it. He was just screaming.
Doesn't work. But if I wish I would have remembered. I would have shown him Mr. Rogers. It probably would have gotten a little.
We screwed up. We could have YouTubed that for that.
Would have been a little easier.
All right, so let's get into Mr. Rogers' early life, just a little bit about him, because I think his life and him growing up really plays a large role into who he becomes as an adult. So we'll get into a little bit of his early life, and then we'll kind of jump over to his career and how he really gets into television, which is interesting because he really didn't get into television, didn't even really see television in his own house until he came back from college. I'm sure you saw that.
Yeah, in the 50s, yeah.
Yeah, he came back to college. You're like, what is this? And his parents are like, we got a new television. And he's like, television? It's like, it's so ironic. Because he was like a grown man by the time he really discovered the medium. And it made his life.
Pretty much.
So, all right, he was born in 1928, right, in Pennsylvania, outside of Pittsburgh. This is about 40 miles out of Pittsburgh. He was born to a fairly well-off family. His father was a very successful businessman and owned a brick company. His mom, from what I read, really wanted to become a doctor. It never really worked out. She kind of became more of like a housewife, but also
like a nurse, medical worker. But she was the one that really instilled in him the idea of like caring for people
and volunteering. She was
volunteering. She said it was big, like, you know, you volunteer, you help people, you're kind to people. And that's kind of how he grew up. And he didn't have any siblings until he was 11 years old when his parents adopted a baby girl. So before that, he was very much isolated. And he talked about being a little chubby, so he was made fun of, right? He was called Fat Fred or Fat Freddy.
Fat Freddy,
which is pretty tame, I guess, by now, but still, you know, very traumatic for a little kid. But
yeah, he was bullied.
What's interesting is that bullying, because he was so isolated and he didn't only child, he used to play with his puppets and stuff like that in his bedroom and change the voices and stuff like that. And that's really a lot of the same characters that he made when he was a child. He brought those characters onto his shows. So they were created during that time. And he just brought them with him. The voices, because he did most of the voices on that show too, which we'll get to. So like, but he made these when he was like, you know, 8 years old in his bedroom, like just trying to entertain himself because he didn't have contact.
Well, he made friends. He basically created friends.
He created his own friend circle. Yeah. Once he got to high school, he said he started coming out of his shell. He said he was shocked because he became really good friends with the captain of the football team.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that led to him becoming basically like class president and doing a lot of other things. He was very good with music too.
Well, he went for music. That was the initial thing. Yes. So in high school, very much an introvert, shy introvert, overweight kid in elementary school. Not even before in elementary school, as a little kid. And then once he goes to high school, he kind of blossoms and makes a lot of friends. Mainly a lot of people tend to like him because he was just a generally nice dude, nice guy. Member of National Honor Society, he became an editor-in-chief of his school yearbook. He did register for a draft after World War II. However, he was eventually found. He didn't pass the medical, right? They said he was unqualified.
Well, first he was found. He did qualify. Then I guess they checked him again. He wasn't for whatever reason.
For
he was small. He was small. Yeah, he was too small.
Oh, he weighed 140 pounds?
No. We'll get to
why.
143 in a minute, yeah.
Yeah, which is important because it's, yeah. Anyway, so after that, he initially goes to Dartmouth College, but only for 1 year. Then he transfers over to Rollins College in Florida, where he graduates magna cum laude in 1951 with a Bachelor of Music. So his background is music, which kind of is understandable when you start thinking about the amount of times he sang and all the songs he wrote and the piano he played, all that stuff that really plays into his background. Eventually, however, he does go back to school in Pittsburgh, right? Theological Seminary, and he becomes an ordained minister in the United Presbyterian Church by 1963, but that's a little bit later.
But he was also, his job at the ministry too was working with children.
Yeah,
was explaining things to children. That's really what kind of just kept him going, and he found like a knack. He knew, everyone always said that Fred just knew how to talk to kids. He just knew how to talk to them with like a respectfulness, directness, and like a caring and gentleness that like kids just opened up to him. And he was generally just so kind. Like, this is what we're gonna keep on saying this, and like kids just gravitated towards him because of that, and how he was able to talk to them on such like about like any topic, but make it seem simpler and easier for them. His first job in television, actually, he said he came home in 1951.
From college,
and saw a TV set, didn't know what it was. And he didn't like TV at first. He thought it was a horrible thing, but then he was like, wait a minute, but this can be used to reach the people that watch this the most, which he says are kids, and I can use this to reach them. And that's really where he gets, he starts to become like a floor manager. He produces music programs for NBC in New York City. And he was hired to do these sorts of things on like the local TV stations. And the first show he was co-producing was a show called Children's Corner. And if you actually see that, that's where that's some of his original puppets, like Daniel Tiger and stuff like that, appear on Children's Corner, which only lasted for 2 years.
Yeah, that was 53. And I think that was a local station. That was after he
shifted. That was in Pittsburgh. Yeah, very local. And then he goes to Canada and he creates, there's a show there called Mr. Rogers, just like one word. And then that laid the groundwork for most of his approach. And he kind of bought the rights to that show and then used that when he left in I think it was 62. And then but he didn't want to basically live in Canada, raise his two sons in Canada, him and his wife, Joanne. So that's when he moves back to the United States, back to Pittsburgh. And then he creates Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood in 1966.
And what's interesting here too, is people believe that he was almost like crazy to do that because his Canadian show was very, very successful.
It's almost like a knockoff now. It's like they'd be like kind of a Canadian knockoff. That was just like the Mr. Shafir it was called.
Exactly. But it was taken over by his friend in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. They were good friends. Yeah. Yep. But he did kind of like a Canadian version of Mr. Rogers. Very similar. If you see a picture, the guy has glasses, wears like a sweater. Like it's very similar to Mr. Rogers.
Canadian version. Yeah. Mr. Rogers. The reason he got even to Canada is because, as you mentioned, a Children's Corner, which was this local public television show, started winning a bunch of awards locally because they're like, this was just awesome children's programming. And what made this programming different is that, and this really plays a part later on as you get into his main show, is that he didn't really concentrate on educating the children per se. He concentrated on the emotional aspect of children. And so it wasn't like, oh, this is like eventually when you look at Sesame Street, it's about learning numbers and colors. Like that was not his jam. This show, The Children's Corner, was very much about just like being in touch with like the human psyche and also the emotions of children. And all these awards led to Children's Corner being broadcast nationally by NBC, which then led to him going to Canada, which then led to him really studying children's psychology. So the show in Canada lasts from 63 to 67 when he had just become minister. And then he winds up coming back by giving up this very popular show. And they're like, why would you do that? And he was like, no, I need to be in the U.S. And he restarts this in 1967. By settling in Pittsburgh with his wife.
And it takes off, obviously, from there. And he basically, before he talks to his audience with like a directness and a respect and issues that children face that wasn't really other programs in touch with. Like Sesame Street was on and it was popular, but Sesame Street is teaching about colors and numbers and letters. That wasn't his show. This was more of the emotional side. Like you said, BC did appear on that other show when a producer said, you know how to talk to kids, you should go on there. He was the host. He was the producer. He wrote all the scripts. He wrote all the songs himself. Jokers asked him, why do you want to do this? He said, because the world is not always a kind place, but children need to learn that for themselves. And we have to help them better understand that and how to help them understand that. And the very first show pretty much started the same way every other show started, with that music, you know.
You pan into his little house.
Pan into the little house. And the Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which was always in yellow, and there was even a reason for that. It was because yellow was like the color, like he wanted to put it there because that was the idea, was slow down, right? Yellow, like a yellow light means slow down. Yeah. So it was the yellow Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and that scrub. I'm seeing in my mind's eye right now, just like all the time, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, just calm down. The very first show, you know, just like all the other ones, he walks in through the front door singing the song, Won't You Be My Neighbor, right? Puts on his jacket, the cardigan, which were all actually, the original ones were all sewn by his mother originally. And one of them is actually in the Smithsonian since 1984. And he, you know, takes off his shoes, puts on the sneakers, which again had a meaning because he was originally, when they were filming, he wore the dress shoes and they were too loud on set. So he's like, I'm going to put on sneakers now. And put that. And he says, I remember learning how to tie my shoe from like literally watching Mr. Rogers. It's like one childhood memory that was popping in my head. It was just so well known. When they had a make-believe, right, and everything like that, it was just like super popular. And all the shows followed that format in some way. And we'll talk about some of the, I think,
shows that were influenced by it.
Really influential shows and some of the ones that were big for the time too.
Yeah. I did not know this for some reason, but the first season, 180 episodes of it were black and white.
Yeah, they were black and white.
I was not aware of until they started, basically became such a hit that, because back then we're talking late 60s. So television, you still have most of television is Westerns and crime dramas and so on and so forth. There's really not much for children.
No, very few shows. Yeah.
And, you know, PBS is really the programming that kind of starts that up. And between Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Sesame Street, no one was really willing to spend the money on children's television, and producing anything in color was very expensive. But once they saw the success that this first season had, PBS is like, all right, we're going to spend the extra money. And basically, they filmed in color. A lot of the funding for the PBS and for Mr. Rogers actually came from Sears. The Sears Foundation, you see that? And other different charities paid to make sure that it was in color.
Well, yeah, I mean, how did it be that color? I can't think of Mr. Rogers not being color. Obviously, when we started watching it, it was in color, was really established, because we were watching it in the mid-80s for the most part. He liked to touch on issues that weren't talked about before. He talked about divorce on his show.
Yeah, especially in the 80s, because that's when the divorce rates were growing.
Yeah, and it was like a big thing. He's like, you know, kids need to know this. And he said, you know, sometimes mommies and daddies fall out of love with each other, but that doesn't mean they love you any less. And he would just like say these things, and it was just like...
It was always topics that were meaningful that you would almost think like children are too young to deal with these topics. And his approach was, well, you have to teach children about civility, tolerance, sharing, self-worth, but you also have to teach these children about real life events and also about disappointment, really. So, you know, I mean, the one big one that basically one of the first seasons, because he started in 68, right? So in the first season, he already has a special segment in which he has to deal with the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, right? So 2 days after the assassination, where the United States is shocked. This is Bobby Kennedy is running for president. I mean, JFK was shot years before. You had MLK shoot. I mean, this is, you know, it's almost like
turmoil. There's a lot of turmoil going on.
Yeah, right? And children see their parents upset. So the way he looks at it is, well, children can see when their parents are upset. They could see and feel.
They can because feel. That was his main thing, the feeling, yeah. And he said no feeling was ever too big or too small. Every feeling had to be talked about, no matter what it was, whether it was, he said, haircuts, divorce, war, assassinations. Let's talk about it. Let's understand this. And he said it in such a calm, like, demeanor. But yeah, he talks about the RFK assassination, like, and addresses it, makes it so that kids can kind of understanding about it. He even did 5 episodes talking about nuclear war in the 60s.
But it's the calmness of it. Like, I wish I could almost have that ability, that demeanor. He spoke, I mean, you guys could all see it, you could YouTube it. He was so calm. It's almost like, I think of Bob Ross whenever, like, I just need to something calm in the background, put something on, I'll put Bob Ross. But, like, you could equally just put on Mr. Rogers. I feel like a kid going nuts would probably calm down. This guy just, like, calms you down. But kind of going back a little bit to his topics, and I think we'll also talk about some of his biggest moments and biggest episodes. He dealt with death, which is something you don't talk to kids about. You know, it's like you try to avoid it. And he's like, no. You know, I remember the death episode. He's talking about... Remember goldfish. His fish? The goldfish died.
And
you see the fish die. He talks about the idea it's okay to cry when someone dies. And then he talks about his dog and how he didn't want to bury his dog when his dog died when he was younger, because it would just be like pretending that he's there. And it's almost like he talked about things that parents felt...
Well, yeah, I said just watching
Mr. Rogers about it. About,
yeah. He talked about it very like honestly and very calmly too. Like, it's not moving. It's not, you know, it's doing nothing at all. So it's, again, it's how they kind of, they can understand it. Yeah, and it was, I think I actually kind of remember that episode too, like at some point. I was like, oh yeah, wow. He doing, you know, just a way that was just like, could reach the kids. And I think one of the biggest episodes he did that they actually reshot later too, was in 1969.
Yep,
right? The Clemens, when Officer Clemens arrives. So what happens is, this is 1969, 1968, right?
So racial biggest tension race in the United
States, right?
And
race riots, and it was still segregation in a lot of the country, particularly in the South. And particularly in pools, and that's something I understand Mr. Rogers, is he loves swimming. He did the same thing. He was an avid swimmer. He would swim every day.
Every morning at 5:30 a.m.
That's what he did. Okay. He was very regimental with that. So what happens is in 1990, it's a hot neighborhood day, right? Mr. Rogers is outside soaking his feet in a kiddie pool. Officer Clemens arrives, and Rogers says, why don't you do the same? It's a hot outside. Why don't you soak your feet in the pool with me? And the two men sit and they sing and they... You know, in the
fact that Mr. Black, right? I mean, I don't know if I mentioned.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Officer Clemens was black. Yeah, so the kids here, and they may not think anything of it. And Rogers wasn't like talking about race in an episode, but it was just his subtle way. He just had these calm, subtle ways. Pools were segregated at the time, right? He was a swimmer, so he definitely disagreed with that. So he wanted to make a statement. How can I do it in a very innocent way? I'm just going to invite the officer who came to check on everybody. Right, it's a hot day. Why don't you soak your feet in this pool with me? Just cool off. lets us hang out and he sings some songs. It's like this shared humanity. And it was really an iconic part of the series. And years later, in 1991, they actually had Officer Clemens return and soak his feet again in the same kiddie pool. They kind of did like come back to it and stuff like that. But again, think about it, you're on TV in 1969, 1991, let's do it again. Like it's just the amount of time. Yeah. It's like such a subtle way. But it was a big deal at the time. Like civil and rights also, activists talk about
absolutely.
That.
And also one other part of the fact that it was a big deal. So the camera pans in on both of their feet, black and white, in the same pool. But afterwards, Officer Clemens like, "Well, I don't have a towel." And he goes, "Oh, he could have my towel." And he helps him dry his feet. And again, that's the symbolism there. It's like we're all in this together. Like we're all friends. It's be kind, regardless of your skin color. Very, very powerful episode. And of course, it wasn't his only powerful episode. I mean, Jeff Erlinger, he was the electric wheelchair boy. Do you remember that one?
Yes, yes.
I watch it and it's like sad and not sad at the same time. It's just, so the episode aired in 1981 before we were even born, you and I, Tom. A disability, right? Wasn't he a paraplegic?
Yes, he was in a wheelchair.
Rogers winds up inviting this boy, Jeff, to a show so he could talk about his experience of having, you know, of using an electric wheelchair. Basically, they sit there and they start singing. They have this conversation and really kind of look at a boy's experience, but they start singing that he's like, "I love you for just the way you are, just who you are inside, and not for your awesome, cool wheelchair." Like, and they laugh together and it was this idea of just taking away some stigma from disability, and specifically, like, you challenging the stigma that surrounds disability. Like,
everyone's the same. Yeah. Everyone's the same. This is a child, right? Yeah. He deserves the same treatment and the same love as every other child. And I'm going to treat him exactly like I would like to be treated myself. So it's these teachings that you hear about, but he's showing the kids that, you know, he's showing them examples of it. And another thing I thought was very interesting is how I'm sure you saw his program was so popular, but on the 70s, you have new technology, which some people listening to this podcast might have no idea about, the VCR.
Yeah.
Right? Right. So the VCR is becoming big. And there was actually a Supreme Court case in 1979, it was Sony Corp of America versus Universal City Studios, where companies were trying to get rid of the VCR because they said, "You're taping our programming. You don't have the right to do that." And it went to actually the Supreme Court. And Rogers actually testified in supporting the VCR. He said, "This is great because it allows people to watch shows when it was convenient for them. And they can watch my show whenever they want." And he said, he said, "Very frankly, I'm opposed to people being programmed by others." He's like, "If you can't watch it at that certain time, because for whatever reason, but you can program your VCR to watch it when you want, when it's convenient for you, that's good. Or you can watch it over and over and over." It's like, that's getting the message across. It's getting into more homes. Why would I not be in support of that? But if that case goes the other way, I mean, DVRs probably would be the same thing. It couldn't happen, right?
Yeah, and I mean,
how different things would be.
And it's not the first time he went and spoke in front of Congress.
No, he does that a lot of times, for public funding and stuff like that.
Yeah, so the public funding one is one of his most famous clips watched on YouTube, believe it or not. So President Richard Nixon decides when he becomes president after LBJ that he is going to cut federal funding for PBS. This is in 1969. And that's kind of why this video of Mr. Rogers, just a year into his show, giving a speech in front of Congress, the Senate Subcommittee on Communications. It goes viral again when Mitt Romney, remember, was talking about cutting
the funding. Yeah.
And same thing when Donald Trump was talking
about funding. Whenever they do, they just pull up Mr. Rogers and people are like, we can't. You can't say anything bad about Mr. Rogers. Like, it just can't. And I think that's what I got from this too. Like, I remember watching him when I was a kid. And then when you get older, you're like, kind of corny or whatever and stuff. And there's a lot of parodies on Mr. Rogers. Probably one of the most famous is Eddie Murphy's Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, which is hilarious. And Rogers loved them. He loved all the parodies. He's like, people, they're all good at heart. He's like, they're all in fun nature. He's like, I love it. He's also, you'd have to know Mr. Rogers' show
in order to
understand the parody. So he loved it. Yeah, he thought it was great. And the guy had a great sense of humor. He never cursed. They said the most he ever cursed would he would say, "Oh, mercy." That was all he ever said. That was like,
oh man, I wish I was that good.
I know, there's the calmness. Like, there was one episode they talked about, he put a microphone in a fish tank, had a guy come over who was like this big, like, marine biologist, and he put a microphone, he put it in the fish tank to hear the fish eat. So they put it in the microphone and the fish didn't go for the food at all. They just never went for it. And they waited and waited and waited. It was like 50 seconds, a minute long, whatever. And the production, like, we have to cut this and do this again. He's like, no, this is great because it's also going to teach the children patience, that they have to wait for what they want sometimes. And sometimes even if you wait, it might not happen, but that's just part of life, and that's just part of experiencing everything. So it's like, oh my God, this is the type of guy that just always saw the world as like about that glass half full mentality. Yeah, like I just wish for like a day I could like have that sort of mindset.
Mr. Rogers for a day.
He's holy man, just a kindness and like just a perspective of life. Like, there's got to be books about like how to be Zen like Mr. Rogers.
I'm sure there is. There totally are books about this. Yeah, one thing you mentioned here too, this idea of just stillness, and there was a speech that he gave, or actually rather an interview at one point, and he talked about the importance of silence in our world.
To reflect,
And he goes, just, we're not silent enough. We're always doing something. We're always going somewhere. And he spoke about the importance of just stopping and listening to the silence. I remember actually watching this interview. You know, sometimes you get just clicking on YouTube and before you know it, you're watching Mr. Rogers in some way, shape, or form. But like, kind of going back real quick, Congress, and when he defended Congress, what was interesting with the Nixon case is that they were going to cut the funding from 10, it was like 10 million, and it was supposed to go to 20 million. And they were like, well, we're not going to give you 20 million. Actually, we're going to cut it to 9 instead of giving you that double. By the time he was done talking to the subcommittee, which you guys could watch this video, the chairman of the subcommittee literally said, like, I just had goosebumps for the first time in the last 2 days. And he goes, you just made yourself $20 million.
Yeah, like, they just gave him the money.
They gave him 22, actually. Instead of raising him from 10 to 20, they gave him $22 million.
Just from talking to him, because he was a great speaker also. And I think he used to give like commencement speeches at colleges all the time. One of his like things he would do, even after he stopped doing the show. Yeah. He would do that just because he was so popular giving these speeches. And he always ended, one of the last ones he gave, he ended with a great quote where he basically said, like, he told everyone, like, again, it goes by what you're saying, to just remain silent for a moment.
Yeah.
He did say, Dartmouth College, and just think about someone who had a good influence on
them. My God, that one. Yeah, that one makes me think.
Send your children, just like think of someone. And that's a great thing sometimes to do. I know this might sound corny or whatever. You know, I get kind of like, feel kind of like, talking about this sometimes. But yeah, just like be quiet. Think about positively about someone who influenced you in a good way. And just to take that time to do something like that. I think that if people did that a little bit more, instead of just, again, like running around going crazy, it probably would like benefit people.
Yeah, absolutely.
It probably would.
Talking about quotes, I mean, so many good quotes. You could plaster your whole wall with them. The one that always resonated with me was this is from Mr. Rogers. When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, look for the helpers. You will always find people who are willing or who are helping.
Well, I think some of the other things that was interesting about him and that kind of shows his impact was I saw the story. There was a couple of stories that I want to like talk about, but one of them I thought that was kind of interesting. It's kind of like a fun fact, but it was still pretty interesting. Was Coco, the gorilla? We could even do a podcast on Coco the gorilla one time. But this video is on YouTube. I was watching it earlier. Coco loved Mr. Rogers. Coco was basically a Stanford educated gorilla who did understand about 2,000 English words. And was a huge fan sign language. And so, yeah, couldn't talk, obviously. Was a huge fan of Mr. Rogers and actually met Mr. Rogers at one time and went crazy in a good way when he saw Mr. Rogers and ran right over, hugged Mr. Rogers, and then took off Mr. Rogers' shoes. He always saw Mr. Rogers taking his shoes off in the show.
Yeah.
So right away. So it actually shows you how like influential this gorilla, and Mr. Rogers is so kind with his gorilla. It's just like, it's interesting. It's just like warmed up to him and knew who he was, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's an awesome video if you guys watch it. Like the gorilla's hugging him and using sign language to tell him he loves him and he misses him, or she misses him because she was a she.
Why we talk about the big crossover?
Oh, with Big Bird.
With Big Bird. So you would think it was big. It was kind of anticlimactic, people say. So it happened in 1981, which is weird because I think I almost remember this episode, but I'm sure they played it again.
It was probably a bunch
of reruns, obviously. So he makes one appearance on Sesame Street in 1981. There was a lot of backstage drama because Mr. Rogers and the guy who played Big Bird, they got into a much of an argument as Fred Rogers were ever going to get into anybody, right? And Fred Rogers was always about being real. Like, he always broke that fourth wall because he talked to the kids at home. So he wanted the actor who put inside of the Big Bird suit, I forget the guy's name, to actually appear without, you know, the Big Bird suit on, or at least with the head off. And the guy's like, no, I want to keep the, you know, illusion alive. This is important for the kids with playing. So then they got in this debate. So they kind of like made a compromise that Rogers, one, he's going to appear earlier wearing this kind of like giraffe costume and taking the mask off. And he was like, whenever you see these costume creatures, just know that there's a person inside, right? And then the only way that Big Bird appeared in the show was in that like land of make-believe that Rogers would go to sometimes. And they're basically there. It is a good episode. It's about competition, like, you know, maintaining your friendship, what do you win and lose, because Rogers was going to be the judge between a race between Snuffy, like that mastodon thing, and Big Bird. So Snuffleupagus and Big Bird were going to have a race. Mr. Rogers was going to be the judge and teach him about how, you know, you can do races with your friends and competition is fine, just your friends first. And that's what's more important. Stuff like that. So again, always had that like sweet, wholesome message.
Yeah. And just kind of going with the messages too. One of his other quotes that he had was that children probably need to hear most from us adults is that they can talk with us about anything and that we will do all we can to keep them safe in any scary time.
How about that story?
Yeah, go to your story.
You know, it's out there. But he was, you know, obviously a friend to a lot of people. A lot of people saw him as being a friend, but there was one sick girl that he actually saved her life. Her name was Beth, and Beth Usher. And she's told her story on a bunch of TV shows that you can actually, I think she was on Ellen not that long ago when Ellen's show was on, like giving the story. And she had a very rare brain disease. And she actually suffered at one point 100 seizures a day. So think about it, they were violent seizures a day. And the only time she wouldn't seize during the day is when she was watching Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
So it was this comment. She said she just felt like he was talking right to me. I used to tell him that I loved him. So she would watch this show. And, you know, for why she watched the show, no seizures. After the show ended, unfortunately, she started having these seizures again. And she's still alive today. So, you know, it has a happy ending. So her parents
asked for an autographed photo, right? Or something.
Yeah, like that's what I was going to say. So her parents write to Mr. Rogers and say, could we have an autographed photo? And they explain the story. So then this is when it gets like so kind, yet also like intense, right?
Yeah.
They get a call from the Mr. Rogers assistant saying, will you be home at 7 p.m. today? And they're like, yeah, we'll be home. Because they decided that to go for this very, not experimental, but dangerous procedure, where they're going to remove part of her brain to stop the seizures.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was life threatening. But the parents decided to do that. And since they love Mr. Rogers so much, let's see if we can, you know, get an autographed picture for our daughter. And then we'll be home this evening at 7. And then he actually called, Mr. Rogers called and talked to the daughter. And not only that, he put on a whole show for her. He did the different voices. He actually had the other people in the show stay and gave her like her own private show. And she says she opened up to...
on a phone, she told him like things she didn't even tell
things
her parents.
She didn't tell her parents, like, I'm afraid of dying and stuff like that. And then the conversation ended with him doing Daniel Tiger's voice, saying that, you know, I love you and everything's going to be okay. So she went and had the surgery, and the surgery went well, but then she slipped into a coma, and he would call the hospital every single day to find out if she was doing okay or not, right? Which is, you know, it's just like, again, just showing his care. This was like, he would do this show, but this is the number one thing on his mind. And then she was not coming out of a coma. This is going on for weeks. So then he's like, all right, I want to come and see her. And he asked the hospital if it was okay. He said, listen, I want to come and see her, but it's just me and her. I want no press. This does not get out. No one knows
about it. This was not part of the show.
And no one knew about this. There's only one picture of it, which is taken later on. And he flies there from Pittsburgh to Baltimore. He has a friend pick him up, and he goes in. He gives his own private show to her while she's in a coma. And he's holding her, and he's like, you know, saying all these things. And he takes out all the puppets from the show, these famous puppets, like the kitty cat. I don't remember, like King Friday, right?
He
leaves them all there.
King Friday, Lady Fairchild.
Yeah, and he leaves them all there. Because he says when she wakes up, he wants her to be surrounded by friends. Keeps on calling every day. She eventually wakes up, and apparently they called him, like the hospital called him. He says, you know, praise God, he came back, you know, he came there and met her and stuff like that. It was just very like, you see these this one picture and you see this him doing this. It's emotional. Okay.
Yeah.
It's emotional. And then she says, listen, he brought so much joy into my life. Like, she's 39 years old today. Like, she says, like, she's still her family. They try to keep his legacy alive today, but they just to say, like, whenever we're like in a bind, what should we just think to ourselves? What would Fred do? You know, instead of, you know, people, the world needs more people like him.
I agree with that.
So I could agree crazy. With that. Because he said everyone is worthy and lovable just the way they are.
Yeah.
Which is just like, but he did do to go out of their way. And a lot of stars do this. Okay. Look at the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And, you know, a lot of stars do this and they do it generally.
John Cena is one of the biggest.
He's one of the ones. Yeah. I was just going to say that. I know. He was one of the biggest ones. He granted the most wishes out of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you watch these interactions, sometimes the same thing that they don't, often they don't want to be, you know, published, and they do it for the kids, which is just great. Like there's no, I give them, that's what you should do when you have that celebrity, that fame, that power to, you know, inspire kids and have influence over kids, right? That's why we became teachers, ideally, right? You want to inspire, you want to help and stuff like that and lead the young people, the young kids in the right way. But they actually went out there and like used it and helps these kids that are in having a hard time. And then she credits him with saving her life.
Yeah.
Like she, like, without him and giving him the strength and keeping her calm. Like when I read that story, that's why I was like, we need to do a podcast on Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers. So let's talk a little bit about Mr. Rogers before you go into, you know, his legacy and death. But let's talk a little bit about him, because you did allude to this earlier in a podcast, this this fact that he weighed 143 pounds.
Yes, yeah, that's a big thing. There's a reason for it. Go ahead.
Yes. So, well, you could get into that if you want. I mean, so he was a very avid swimmer, as you mentioned before. Yeah. Got up every morning around 5:30 a.m. He read the Bible, went swimming every single day. Sometimes he would wake up, they say, between 4:30, around the 4:30 a.m. to go to the Pittsburgh Athletic Association to get his swim in. So, like, every single time. He never smoked or drank anything.
He was a vegetarian.
Vegetarian. He said he couldn't bring himself to eat anything that had a mother. He napped daily and then went to bed at 9:30 p.m. every night, yeah. Slept 8 hours per night without interruption. They said that his weight of 143 pounds was destiny fulfilled. And why is that, Tom?
Because 143 means I love you.
Yep.
One letter for I, four letters for love, L-O-V-E, and three letters for you. So he would always have to maintain 143. I was just looking at that, 143. I don't think I've weighed 143 since middle school. Probably when I stopped watching Mr. Rogers.
Oh, dude, but I don't remember when I weighed 143.
But no, he maintained 143.
So essentially what ends up happening is he does retire in 2001. Then 9/11 happens. And for the 1 year anniversary of 9/11, he comes back to basically give like a message. It's like a video recorded message that airs. I think he records it before, but it airs at the 1 year anniversary. But he winds up having really bad chronic stomach pains that were severe enough that basically made him see a doctor in October of 2002, where they diagnosed him with stomach cancer. From what I saw, he delayed his treatment at one point because he wanted to be like a grand marshal of
a grand marshal in a parade. He passed away in 2003 with his wife basically there. February. They were married for 51 years. And when he died, it becomes front page news around the world.
Yep, everywhere.
It's just like Mr. Rogers passes away. Like it was just such a huge story because this is like his icon. Again, everyone at that time knew who Mr. Rogers was. So his passing was a big deal. It was like truly the end of an era, the end of this great person who influenced so many people, like countless people. And that's another thing I think we forgot to mention before is he answered every letter he ever got. And he kept every letter he ever got. And that's not a lie. It's not an exaggeration. Literally, he would spend hours every day. It was part of his regimen that you talked about before, Pete, right? Is he would spend hours every day just answering fan mail. Kid wrote him a letter, he responded back. Because he said, if they took the time to write to me, they deserve that. I'm going to respect that. I'm going to take the time to write back to them. So imagine that being a kid and you would actually get a letter back from Mr. Rogers.
Nuts. After his death, a lot of people cite him as an inspiration, particularly for different children's shows, such as Arthur, a PBS own show, but also Blue's Clues, which is what I remember as well. Yeah. Blue's Clues producer and co-creator, Angela Santomiro, you know, she was got a degree in developmental psychology and got into educational television primarily because of the fact that she admired Mr. Rogers. And she used Rogers' techniques, such as using child development educational research, having the host speak directly to the camera, transition to make-believe world. Like basically Blue's Clues, it was like an updated version.
Well, didn't she eventually leave? It was one of them producers that left Blue's Clues and went and started Daniel Tiger.
I think it was her. She started Daniel Tiger in 2012.
Which Daniel Tiger is the son of Daniel Scripe Tiger, which was the one that was on Mr. Rogers.
Yep. And that one's that's a cartoon.
I think it's still on, right?
It's still on. Yeah. I mean, my kids watched it, but my kids are older now a little bit, but they still watched it.
I know he says in the show, how are you doing today, neighbor?
No, it still goes, would you be my neighbor? It still does the whole thing. More recently, following the tragedies at Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting and the Manchester Arena bombing in England and various different school shootings, and especially the one in Parkland, Florida in 2018 as well, a lot of like Rogers quotes and words of comfort have been circulating on social media.
It also became kind of big, right, in 2018 when they had A Beautiful Day Neighborhood, which was a film starring Tom Hanks.
which is actually his. Did you see that? That it's like he's somehow
he's like a ninth cousin related to like related somehow to related to Mr. Rogers, which they came out and we were figuring that out. And it's like a true story of this. What was it? I forgot what magazine, but he was basically, you know, put in charge of going to meet and give an interview with Mr. Rogers. Like it was a segment called Our Heroes. He was like, oh, I'm going to like expose this guy, you know, and be like, this is just an act how he acts. And like, oh my God, this guy really acts like this. And in real life, Rogers actually helped the guy through his own traumas and like stuff. He's basically, the guy had like a cut on his nose that he got because he got in a fight at a wedding, which is a whole other story. Yeah. And then Mr. Rogers is basically asking him out, are you okay? Are you sure you're okay? How can I help you? Well, something must have happened if you know, and he's like showed more caring for this guy than, you know, like doing the story. And there's a real thing that happened. I never saw the movie, but I did see the story about it, but I want to see it now. It's a true story where they went on a train and this kid recognizes Mr. Rogers. Like, oh, that's Mr. Rogers.
I saw that.
And he goes and talks to the kid. And then everyone on the train starts singing, "Won't You Be My Neighbor?"
Yep.
To him, that actually really happened. Can you imagine that today in 2023?
Yeah.
People on the side, I've seen a lot of Subway videos that pop on Twitter lately. They're not singing, "Won't You Be My Neighbor?"
Yeah.
Like, there's some crazy stuff going on, you know, Subways nowadays, but they just broke into "Won't You Be My Neighbor" because they saw Mr. Rogers. He just projected that like feel good aura. I'm inspired by, I'm making Mr. Reska's neighborhood now. That's it. Like, it's going to be.
Oh, I love it.
It's just one of those things. Like, oh, man. I don't know. Like, I remember watching as a kid, but like now just really looking at,
there's
a whole website.
That's because you're a parent now. That's because you're a parent.
Well, there's a website that says like fathering through Mr. Rogers' teachings. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have to do that. Just a patience. I don't know how anyone could have that level of patience and stuff.
Well, we're
that
teachers. That we have to have patience. We have some patience.
And we do. I probably
not
have
Mr.
more
Rogers level, but you know.
No. But that's what really resonating with me is what you saw is what you got. Like that was not an act.
And hopefully you guys will, this will inspire you to go and research Mr. Rogers a little bit more and maybe rewatch some of those episodes that you have long since forgotten.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much, guys, for tuning in once more. We do appreciate it. If you need to find us, you can find us at www.historyteacherstalkingpodcast.com. Also, follow us on social media. Make sure you click that like button, subscribe button. Leave us a review if you like us. Why not? And I guess that's it. And we'll see you guys next week.
Stay safe, everybody. And remember, what would Fred do?
That's right. I hope everyone enjoyed our podcast, and if you would like to email us, you can do so at historyteacherspodcast@gmail.com.